Welcome to another episode of the Oncology On The Go podcast. I'm your host, Roman Fabricatore. In this episode, we dive into the practice-changing data reshaping the management of aggressive and indolent B-cell lymphomas. Fresh off presentations at the 2026 American Society of Clinical Oncology Annual Meeting and the European Hematology Association Annual Congress, Cancer Network sat down with Matthew Matizar, Chief of the Division of Blood Disorders at Rutgers Cancer Institute, to break down the most talked about data sets in the field. First, Matizar shared expert clinical perspectives on the Phase 3 frontMIND trial, evaluating the tafasitamab lenalidomide R-CHOP triplet in newly diagnosed high-risk diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, assessing how to balance its progression-free survival benefit against incremental toxicities and scheduling demands. Furthermore, the conversation explored encouraging data regarding bispecific antibody combinations for elderly or frail patient populations, as well as innovative engineering strategies aimed at overcoming the challenging fratricide phenomenon in cellular therapies for relapsed T-cell lymphoma. Tune in as we discuss how these next-generation targeted agents and immunotherapy platforms are actively moving into earlier lines of treatment to optimize patient outcomes. So my first one for you, very general one, ASCO-specific. What, in your opinion, were the top abstracts? Were there any that particularly surprised you or stuck out?
I think that there was a lot of progress that we've seen reported out at ASCO this year. I would say that some of the highlights really focus around our management of aggressive B-cell lymphoma. We have data from the frontMIND trial, which are very interesting, concurrently published in The Lancet, and we're all trying to wrap our heads around what this might mean for our field. Some encouraging data about ongoing development of novel strategies in treating elderly or less fit patients with large cell lymphoma. And I would say some emerging data around new targets and new mechanisms of action as we continue to try to expand our therapeutic armamentarium.
Thank you. And then this one is a bit more general for EHA, but what unique findings emerged from that conference, and what were some of the key takeaways from that meeting?
You know, sometimes EHA exists in the shadows of ASCO. There were some new data being presented at EHA this year that were new to us. One that I was particularly impressed by was the presentation of the initial safety run-in from the SoundTrack F1 study presented by Chan Che and colleagues, looking at first-line therapy with cerevatamig, the novel CD19 bispecific antibody in the treatment of newly diagnosed, previously untreated follicular lymphoma.
Thank you. So this one is actually related to the frontMIND trial, which you already touched upon earlier, but establishing a clear PFS advantage for the tafasitamab lenalidomide R-CHOP triplet in high-risk diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. How should community and academic oncologists select which high-risk patients receive this intensive regimen versus, say, standard R-CHOP?
I think a lot of us are digesting these data right now. You know, there's important methodological elements that need to be understood. This was, as you've indicated, a study looking at patients with high intermediate risk or high risk large cell lymphomas with an IPI score of 3 or more, a narrower and risk-enriched population compared to the Polarix trial. It was compared to an R-CHOP program as opposed to the Polarix program, adding on additional drugs in the form of tafasitamab, the CD19 monoclonal antibody, and lenalidomide on top of R-CHOP versus R-CHOP alone. You know, this is also different than the Polarix trial, where we had substitution yielding two programs that had very similar toxicity profiles. Here we're adding on tafalen with additional toxicities from those drugs, as well as logistical challenges with regards to the treatment schedule, specifically with regards to tafasitamab. So the study was positive for its primary endpoint of progression-free survival, 25% lower risk of progression or death. When your study is positive for its primary endpoint, that's going to get everyone's attention. It's hard to beat R-CHOP in this modern era. It did so. It did so without yet demonstrating a statistically significant overall survival benefit. So here we have a situation where we have a PFS benefit without OS benefit, with incremental toxicity and schedule challenges that we're going to have to weigh. There may be a role for it in the treatment of some subset of high-risk large cell lymphoma patients who wish to pursue a more intensive treatment program and for whom the treating oncologist may prefer R-CHOP over a POLA-based treatment program. Who exactly those patients are, I think, remains to be seen.
Thank you for elucidating that for me. Given the promising data surrounding epcoritamab plus R-mini-CVP for patients deemed unfit or frail with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, do you see this non-anthracycline bispecific-driven approach completely replacing standard attenuated chemotherapy in the front line?
In the short term, the answer is absolutely not. But I am very much encouraged by these strategies. Broadly speaking, I love that our field is taking an ambitious swing at how best to take care of patients who are older and less fit with large cell lymphoma. This is a disease that is more common as we age. Older, frail, or unfit patients have been tremendously underserved historically by our therapeutic research programs. This is a very nice step forward where we're getting rid of anthracycline in the program, and epcoritamab, the CD20 bispecific antibody combined with CVP chemotherapy instead of CHOP, yielding very impressive early results. Small study, exploratory, it's a short follow-up, but very encouraging. It paints a way forward that we're going to be using bispecifics more in a way to try to leverage that efficacy and to try to limit the short and long-term toxicities of chemotherapy in this frailer patient population. Whether this is the right combination, whether it's going to be glofitamab plus POLA plus Rituxan, whether it's going to be bispecific monotherapy in an ultra-frail population like in the Morning Sun trial, there's a lot of strategies that we're deploying, and I'm very encouraged by our progress.
Thank you for that. You previously noted that the CONQUER trial was a potential underdog session due to its sophisticated engineering to prevent CAR T fratricide. So, for cell therapy coordinators, pathologists, and transplant physicians, what does this engineering milestone mean for the future of CAR T in T cell malignancies? And how did the lack of severe cytokine release syndrome look in practice?
It is very exciting. Obviously, CAR T-cell therapy has altered the therapeutic landscape in the treatment of many types of B-cell lymphoma, most notably diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, where it's become the standard of care in the second-line setting for most patients. We've had a lot of difficulty in achieving those types of results with other forms of lymphoma, including T-cell lymphoma, as well as classical Hodgkin lymphoma. This is a nice step forward. It's a cell that was able to, in a small but early work, yield meaningful results, an acceptable and manageable safety profile. It's been hard, right? Because T cells that you're trying to kill, T cells, are not to have them kill each other. This fratricide phenomenon has been a challenging hurdle for the field to overcome. There's a number of different ways to do that in terms of editing the cells. This is a very attractive approach, and I think that it demonstrates feasibility not just for this one cellular product, but it gives us increased optimism that the field will continue to evolve and offer us novel approaches to treating relapsed T-cell lymphoma, which continues to present a very grave prognosis even in this modern era.
Those were some very salient points that you made right there. How close are we to potentially retiring bendamustine rituximab or R-CHOP for high tumor burden follicular lymphoma, given the emergence of bispecifics? And what are the primary safety and sequencing hurdles the multidisciplinary team must anticipate if T-cell engagers move to the front line?
So the first part of your question is how close are we to getting rid of chemo? I would say that we're trying. We're obviously not there yet, but we're trying. And there's a number of different pivotal studies trying to look at moving bispecific antibodies into the first line that hold great promise. It makes sense on paper, right? Giving these drugs to virgin snow immune systems, T cells that haven't been monkeyed with by our prior treatments, including bendamustine, notably T cell toxic agent, is inherently attractive. We have some limited exposure and experience already demonstrating safety and efficacy in this context with good activity, low rates of toxicity, all very encouraging. We're doing this a lot of different ways, right? We have mosunetuzumab monotherapy for low tumor burden FL in the SWOG study. We have epcoritamab plus R squared being looked at versus chemoimmunotherapy and maintenance. We have cervatimate, which we referenced earlier in our conversation, being deployed in the SOUNDTRACK-1study compared to chemoimmunotherapy as monotherapy. So a lot of different parallel strategies as we're trying to figure out which are our best drugs, which are the right patients, and how deep is this rabbit hole. In terms of how we move from putative success with these studies into wider deployment, I'm encouraged by the pace of community adoption of bispecific antibodies, not just in lymphoma, where we have seen a very nice uptake over the last year, but certainly being driven as well by the adoption of bispecifics in other disease states, including solid tumor malignancies. This is one of those rising waters lift all ships scenarios, in my opinion. And as the clear need to be able to deploy these agents to treat a broader range of patients and to address a greater spectrum of unmet need, we're in the lymphoma community going to benefit from that work. And we'll see our community partners increasingly capable of delivering these treatments, such that my expectation is that by the time these studies read out positively in the years to come, God willing, we will have an oncology community that's ready to meet that data where it is and deploy it in the best service of our patients.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcast. The Oncology on the Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network.